Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's session on how to write emails that don't get deleted. I'm Jill Conrath, author of two Amazon best-selling books. One is Snap Selling, which is really about how to sell to today's crazy busy prospects, and then the other one is Selling to Big Companies, which helps you get your foot in the door of bigger companies, as we say. Anyway, one of the challenges, the biggest challenges that sellers are facing today is getting access to get to that initial meeting. We have clients, potential clients, our prospects. They're not answering the phone. They're rolling all calls to voicemail. They're not calling us back. We send them emails, and we hear nothing. And that's really, really frustrating if your job is based upon having customers or clients to work with. If nobody answers the phone and nobody returns your message, it's really hard to get business for your company, which, by the way, is what led me to some intensive studies in terms of what worked in today's crazy busy work environment. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what does it take to capture the attention of these crazy busy people and be on their radar screen so that we have the opportunity to do business with them. Spent a lot of time figuring what doesn't work as well because the delete response is so fast and intense with most people today, and we need to know what doesn't work so we don't waste our valuable time doing things that actually work against us. But let me say up front that if you're here and you're looking for magic dust, I don't offer magic dust, but I do offer you a good process that you can use. It'll require a little work from you, but I can guarantee you from the onset that if you're willing to invest the time to do the work, you will see results. You absolutely will see results. This process that we're talking about today is based on a good understanding of your prospects, because without knowing them intimately, you're just shooting in the dark and hoping that something that you say will stick. But the reality of it is our customers today, our prospects, are highly discerning. They're very picky about what they pay their attention to, and it's our job to ensure that we're aligned with what's going on with them. So get your pens handy. Turn off your email. You're not going to have time to read it because we are getting started right now on all those things that you need to know in order to write emails that don't get deleted. So, as I said, it all starts with your prospect, and we're going to look at your prospect right now. I want to give you some statistics so you understand just how serious the situation is that we're dealing with. The average prospect today, research shows, has 59 hours of work sitting on his or her desk waiting to be completed. That's a whole week and a half of work sitting on somebody's desk that isn't done right now. This is the burden that our prospects are carrying around. They're feeling absolutely overwhelmed. The last thing they want to do is add more work to their already overflowing schedule. They don't have any more time, and they have fewer resources than they've ever had before. This is essential to know because this is the world that we're trying to get into. We also need to know that the average person that we're trying to reach has maybe 1 to 2 hours on his or her calendar during the course of a week when they're willing to meet with people like us. But you're not just competing for that time with your competitors. You're competing for that time with anybody else who has ideas or sells things that may be of interest to the person that you're trying to contact. So it's a highly competitive market for the time that they have available. And if we want to get on their calendar, we need to be doing the right things because they're very discerning. You all know, too, probably that 95% of your calls are rolling to voicemail right now and nobody is getting back to you. You might also want to know that the average corporate person is getting between 150 to 300 emails a day. Smaller companies, you will often find 75 to 100 emails a day. So people are overwhelmed with emails. So you think, well, I'll try calling, I'll email. You have a lot of competition in their email box, and they 0% of them want to spend time with the salesperson. That's the reality. They don't want to meet with people like us. And I know some of you aren't salespeople. You're consultants or you're professionals of sort, but you are selling your services as well. But they don't want to meet with anybody who's asking them to take up their valuable time for something else. Their favorite computer icons, they love the delete button in the trash can. You need to know that they sit with their finger on that delete button at all times. And the faster they can delete somebody, the better. But that's what they're here to do, is delete your message so they can get back to their work. That's what they're thinking. I need to get through this email. Oh, yes, yeah, so you're trying to get their attention. And there's a whole lot of factors that are involved. And an email is such a simple little thing. I mean, you might think it's maybe, you know, you can dash it off in a few seconds, or, you know, certainly not less, more than, you know, 150, 200 words. But that's not the case. You're being evaluated. There are so many factors that are being evaluated in this email that you really need to understand. You're being evaluated on the subject line. You're being evaluated, and you know, you have to think about the length of the email. We need to think about the device that it's being read on, because that makes a difference between how the email, you know, is read and how it's interpreted. We need to think about the readability and what we're actually saying in the content. We need to think about our personal style in the message, and we also need to think about attachments and links. So all these things are related to email marketing, email prospecting, and we're going to talk about as many as we can today. Probably not all, but we'll get a lot of them done. But let me just tell you a little bit about what I discovered in terms of working with prospects, in terms of how they make decisions today. And this was really a fascinating journey for me as I was looking at what are the factors, all the factors that they're taking into consideration as they're reading your email message or listening to your voicemail message or determining if they're going to go ahead with you. And basically I found there were four very basic criteria that they were using nearly all the time to judge you, the seller. So our awareness and knowledge of this criteria is huge in terms of crafting messaging that can't be ignored. So what we need to realize, and I'll go through these in order, and these are what I call my snap factors, like snap your fingers, and that's because they make snap decisions on different things too. It's all happening really fast, especially with a little email message. But they're evaluating them holistically. They can't necessarily pick out one thing, but they're evaluating all four of these criteria concurrently. And the first one they're evaluating is simplicity. They're taking a look at your message, and they're judging very quickly. Does it look simple or does it look complex? A long, rambling email is complex. Delete. An email with big words and gobbledygook. Delete. If it makes them struggle to figure out what you're trying to say because you're not clear, delete. So they're automatically looking at simplicity. And you either are simple or you're not. You're not sort of simple. You're either readable and they can get what you're saying, or it's deleted. This is what you need to realize. That snap response is so fast. The second thing they're looking for, and this is the N in snap, is invaluable. So we've got simple is the S, N is invaluable. They're looking to see if you sound like you're worth meeting with. Are you an invaluable resource? And they are judging that by what you say in your email. They're not going to work with you if you sound like every other self-serving salesperson out there. And boy, they do know what salespeople sound like. So they're judging you, and I'll show you ways you can be much more invaluable sounding, but you have to change how your email is written. The third thing they're deciding on, and this is the A in snap, is aligned. Are you aligned with their business objectives? There's not one person that you're emailing right now, or barely one out of a million, that is actually sitting there waiting for you to sell them something. They're just thinking, how are we going to reach these objectives? How am I going to meet my sales quota? How am I going to make my numbers? How am I going to reduce the increase the efficiency or reduce the cost? That's what they're thinking of. They're not thinking about your stuff. They're not thinking about your services. They're only thinking about their things. So we need to make sure that we either show them that we're aligned with what they're trying to achieve, not talk about our stuff, because if you talk about your stuff, you're irrelevant. That's what they don't care about your stuff, just their objectives. And finally, they care about their priorities. And if you can align with what's important to them right now, you have a much better chance of getting your foot in the door and setting up that meeting than if you just talk about what you can do. But if you can align with a priority issue, then you have a chance to get in too. So those are the four things that they're deciding on. And the impact on their delete reaction, 2.7 seconds. I want you to think of that every time you're thinking about your email message. They are taking the average person, and this is a study by Exact Target, a big email provider. The average person takes 2.7 seconds to decide if they're going to read your email, delete it, or forward it to somebody else. That means that what you say has to be so spot on or else you're gone. And most of us don't think like that. We don't realize we only have 2.7 seconds. That means we need to omit certain things. We need to omit any gracious introduction. And so many people start their emails really nice. And they might say, Hi, Eric, I'm Jill, and I'm the new account executive with XYZ Company. And they think that that's a very gracious introduction. Other people might say, I'm writing to let you know about, to introduce you to our company. And then they go on to explain what their company is about. I'd like to introduce myself and my company to you, and here's what we specialize in. Oh, my God, those are delete responses just like that. The minute you do a nice, gracious introduction or do a company overview, our company specializes in, it creates a delete. So get rid of that crap from your emails right now. It's killing you. And I know you think that that's what they need to hear, what your company does, but honest to God, they really don't need to hear that. What they need to hear is what happens, what results you deliver, and we'll get into that in a minute. But you got to cut out some more things. You cannot say anything nice about your company. Ooh, you can't say you're award-winning. You can't say you have, you know, you specialize in service. You can't say that you have state-of-the-art technology or anything that looks like it's a bragging word, you know, that makes you best or better or you know, that you might say to impress people. Those have to go, because at that moment in time when you start saying any of those impressive words, and those are adjectives and adverbs, like I think our teachers used to tell us, those are words that create deletes. And if you want to create a delete and get your message gone, blasted into oblivion, that's fine. That's what will happen. But if you don't want to, you have to get rid of all that crap. It's self-serving. It's thinking that that's what you should be doing as a salesperson. You should be touting your stuff. But that's not what good sellers do. Good sellers realize that their stuff helps people achieve business objectives. I could say that I have an award-winning training program. I could say I have state-of-the-art training programs, but my customers don't give a rip about my training programs. When I do work for my clients, all they care about is increasing new client acquisition and shortening their time to sale. That's what my customers care about. That's what I talk about, not my award-winning training programs or all the training programs from A to Z. You got to cut that stuff out, and they don't care how you do stuff. They really don't, and they don't care about your technology if you're a technology person and you love to talk about your robust systems that are scalable and your interoperability and all that crap. Excuse my French, but honestly, you have to get rid of that stuff because it doesn't make anybody care, and you have 2.7 seconds to get them to care. And if you're doing that thing, they're deleting you. You need to realize that when somebody reads your email, they're literally asking themselves, is this worth my time? Is this worth my valuable time, my really valuable time? And if it isn't, you are deleted into oblivion in that nanosecond. So hopefully I've scared the living daylights out of you by telling you what you can't do. Usually at this point, I find that most people are going, Jill, now I don't know what to say. You know, I mean, that's kind of what I've been doing. And I've been, you know, doing what my marketing department has been telling me in terms of, you know, you need to say these nice things about it. Or my boss has been saying, you know, make sure you stress that we have a passion for excellence, you know, or that we're one-stop shopping for all their printing needs. And, you know, that's, you can do that if you want to be ineffective. But if you want to be effective and get your emails responded to, then you have to change the game. So let's talk about what makes an effective email message. I'm just going to start out covering a few things. Basically, I want to just say, you know, from the get-go, you need to think about being personalized. People need to feel like you wrote this email just for them, that they're not, it's not being blasted out to a gazillion people. And I'll show you ways that you can demonstrate that. But they do need to feel that it's a very personalized email. And you may send some of the same emails or similar emails to a number of people because they're the same kind of customers. But the person who receives it needs to feel that it was just for him or her, which means you probably want to put their name on there as opposed to good day or hello. It needs to be tied to their business needs, and again, I'll show you how to do that. It needs to be short and sweet. Let me just cut to the point. Short and sweet. The shorter and sweeter, the better. It needs to start a conversation. You're not trying to sell anything in an email. Nobody will ever buy anything from you in an email, not in the B2B world. And finally, it needs to be peer-to-peer. You can't sound like a new kid on the block, and you can't sound like that you're a wannabe who really hopes that they'll spend some time with them and you'd be glad to meet at your earliest convenience. Instead, you need to sound like the professional you are, and your email will reflect that, and people can tell right away. So there are three stages. There are three parts of an effective email message. And the first part, I'll go through the three first, and then I'll tell you how to do each of them. The first thing you have to do in your email message is you have to establish credibility. And you have to establish it in literally the first sentence. I'll show you how in just a second. The second thing that you have to do is you have to pique curiosity. When somebody reads your email, they should say, and you need to think of this phrase all the time, "Ooh, that's interesting. I'd like to learn more." That's what the email should do. It should make somebody say, "Ooh, that's interesting. I'd like to learn more. How did they do that?" You know, but they should be curious. That's what the purpose of the email is, to evoke curiosity, to start the conversation with somebody who isn't thinking about changing right now. It's a start of a conversation. And, you know, nobody wants to get married on the first date, so we're just getting a conversation going. And the third thing that your email should do is it should close graciously. So we establish credibility, we pique curiosity, and then we close graciously. And I'll go through each of those. We'll start with established credibility. Now, the very best way in the whole wide world to establish credibility is to reference a referral. Now, I know some of you are squirming right now saying, "Well, yeah, but Jill, I don't have any referrals." And that may be the case. But let me just go back to it from the get-go. Some of you do have referrals, and you're not leveraging them, or you're not leveraging them well. If you have talked to somebody who suggested you talk to the person you're contacting, then you need to put that information in the very first sentence of your email message. So your email might read, "Eric, John Smith suggested I get in touch with you." Or you could put, "John Smith suggested I get in touch with you" in the subject line. And then in the first line, you might write, "While attending the recent ABC conference, I spoke with John Smith about the challenges of email marketing. He suggested that I get in touch with you with some of the things that period. So you're bringing in the reason and the context for where you met John Smith. Or if you met John Smith in a different division, then you might say, "I've been working with John Smith in the XYZ division of your company, and he suggested that I get in touch with you, that you might be interested in what we're doing in his business unit." So immediately show your referral. If you have one, use it and state it up front. Don't, you know, keep some reading. They don't know where you're going. You're buying 2.7 seconds with that. Now you need to get to the next 2.7 seconds. But if you don't have the referral, let me just give you two other ways that you can use to keep them reading and to make you stand out. Remember, you're trying to establish credibility at the front end, and we're not doing it by bragging about your stuff or by touting your service or your wonderful products. What we're doing is we're establish personal credibility as a resource that's worth meeting with. So the second thing that you can do to establish credibility is to show that you've done your homework. Ooh, homework, you say? Yes, I said homework. Because your prospect, somebody who is crazy busy, doesn't want to waste time with somebody who has some understanding of either his business or his position or his industry. So what you might say, and I'm going to give you some different examples that might help you understand how to build your credibility from the onset in just that first sentence. You might say, "In my work with other hospitals," or "In my work with other manufacturing plants," or "In my work with other customer service providers." Again, you're showing that you've done, that you're working with other people. And then you might say, "In my work with other customer service providers, one of their key issues is how to generate leads without selling." Or "In my work with other manufacturers, one of the key issues that they're facing is how to reduce their overall supply chain costs." And so you might tie it in with something that now is really of value, because now we're talking, You know, they know that you've worked in their industry or with people like them, and they also know you've worked on issues and challenges that they might be facing. So you can do that very easily by mentioning in my work, or, you know, or here's another way. You can study their website. And you can discover on their website that something is happening, they have a new strategic initiative. Or you could discover that they're launching new products. You could discover a whole lot of different things on their website. And you could say in your first email, in researching your company, I noticed that. And then you tie the something that you noticed has to be relevant to what you're selling. So, I mean, you can't say, I noticed that you're expanding to Europe, and by the way, I sell flowers. You know, you might say, I noticed that you're having some major expansion plans, and then you have to tie that in with what you do. So you have to bring in the fact that you've done your homework, you know, you've noticed. Or in reading the Wall Street Journal, again, it's showing that you've done your homework and that you understand what's happening in the industry. Or you might say, again, like in working with other human resource directors, again, you're not a dummy. You've worked with people like this before. You have some understanding. And then the third thing that you can do to build your credibility is to mention what I call a trigger event. And a trigger event that is something that's either happening out there in the greater environment that's having an impact on the organization, or it's something that's happened internally to the organization and changing their priorities. But a trigger event causes change. It's something that's happening that suddenly makes an organization look at things differently. Right now, the volatile economy is certainly an external trigger event that's having a major impact on those of us who are trying to get business because people are afraid of what to do. But it's a trigger event, and if you can figure out how to align your message with that trigger event, you can oftentimes capture people's attention. There was a period of time a while ago where gas prices were a huge external trigger event, and I showed some of my clients how to leverage gas prices, even though they didn't do anything to address gas prices. But by bringing in the fact that with gas prices so high, I have some, you know, it's something that's out of your control, you're probably looking at things that are within your control. And so you take gas prices and pull it back to out of control, and then we have some things that are in your control. Other trigger events might be major new product announcements that the company has. It could be third quarter earnings where they would, you know, announce that third quarter earnings were up, they're down, they're stagnant, whatever it is. That's a trigger event because suddenly there's new priorities in the organization, new leadership changes, opening new plants, moving to different locations in the country. All those things are trigger events. You need to find out which are the trigger events that are applicable to your business, and I do talk about that in both my books because I honestly think it's the best way to get into companies right now is to leverage trigger events. So those are the things that you have to mention in the first sentence of your email that show, I mean, this is the invaluable part that sets you apart from every other seller. You're immediately demonstrating that you have some knowledge that's worth listening to because you're not saying, I'm writing to introduce myself or I'd like to introduce you to our company or a bunch of gobbledygook that really is irrelevant about your organization. You're getting right to the point and you're sounding like a peer that might be worth meeting with. And this is exactly how we need to start our messages. Now, see, I told you we're covering a lot of ground really fast. And we'll just keep right on going. Okay, so now that we've established some credibility in that email message, now we have to pique their curiosity. So the next part, sentence 2 or 3, or sentence 3 and 4, would focus on establishing credibility. And not about piquing curiosity. And there are three ways to pique curiosity, three basic ways to pique curiosity. And I want you to be aware of all of them. Some of you may use one in particular. Others of you may choose to use all three in different email messages. And by the way, I want you to know from the get-go, you're not going to just write one email message and, you know, hit the jackpot. You have no idea how that message is being received, so you need to plan a campaign of messages that you launch that extends over a period of time. But let's get back to how you pique curiosity. One of the best ways that I've found is by sharing your value proposition. And people often don't understand what that word means, so I'm going to define it my way. And in Jill's world, a value proposition is a statement about the business outcomes that your company delivers. It's a clear statement about the business outcomes your company delivers. Let me give you an example. My company does sales training. I work with sales organizations. I go in and speak and train with salespeople. But that's not my value proposition. My value proposition relates to increasing new client acquisition and speeding up the sales cycle. So I might say something about, in my work with other VPs of sales, I do a lot of work on shortening time to revenue on new product introductions or speeding up the sales cycle. In fact, one of my recent customers was able to realize these results. 87% of their reps were able to set up meetings with large corporate accounts within 2 months of the training. And in some cases, they'd been unable to get into these accounts for years. That's a value proposition. It's a statement about what happens because somebody uses my services. It's not a competitive differentiator or how you're unique or creative or different from competitors. It's how you help customers improve from the status quo. The value proposition is a comparative with the status quo, how you've helped companies achieve things because of working with you. Some examples for a website company that handles people's shopping carts. You can increase their sales conversion rate by 57%. Other companies could reduce turnover by 6.5% or decrease the accident ratio by 31% or improve trade show leads by 27.8% or save $180,000 in just 6 months. These are metrics and measurables, and boy, if you have them, they're really good. And people will go, ooh, how'd she do that? That's what you want them to do. So you share some of the results that you have. But you just share one per email message. You don't dump a whole bunch in there because you're going to need other messages to get in touch with this person. So the truth is we keep it short. We keep one value proposition per email. Now, please note that the value proposition had increase, decrease, speed up, reduce. It's got movement from that status quo, and the best ones have metrics. Now, I know not everybody has metrics, so I'll show you what to do if you don't have metrics. What you can do is you can become the idea person, and you can focus on bringing them ideas. And all you can have to say then is, I work with a number of other companies in this area, and I've got some ideas on how you might reduce, speed up, minimize, shrink, and then you put in that value proposition word. You just don't have the specific one with metrics that stand out differently. So you're selling the concept of, I have some ideas. I've worked with other people in similar businesses. They've had these kind of problems. I've helped them achieve these results. And your message is very pointed, very short, and you don't have to focus on a lot of things, just one thing per email. So you can bring them ideas. And finally, the last thing you can do is you can offer them invaluable information. And you go, wow, invaluable information? Like, what do you mean, Jill? Well, first of all, some of you may have a website with some good information on it, and I'm going to tell you right now, if you've got anything on your website, like articles on your website that are posted that have been written internally, if you've got white papers, if you have ebooks, those are all good resources to bring to people. If your company has done any studies, if you're offering any webinars or seminars, that's all good. If you have any checklists in terms of how to do something. Again, people are interested in that, and they're also interested in assessment tools. Now, those are all things that are informational and educational in nature, and they help people compare. At one stage, they help them compare their different kinds. There's a kind that can help them understand why they should change from the status quo or how changing from the status quo will be a benefit to them. And those are what I suggest for early stage emails for people who aren't making decisions yet. And then there's educational information that helps people differentiate between options. But the reality is, when you're sending an email out, you really need to focus on information that helps people understand why change is valuable, why change is important, why change is necessary. Now, some of you are going to score me and saying, but Jill, we have a website that's lousy. It doesn't have any of that stuff on. And, you know, a lot of companies are in that position, and you can either blame the website or you can get creative. And some of you won't like that, but I'm going to tell you right now that your company isn't the only one in the world that has that, you know, that's like that. There's a lot of people, and they're successful, but they're leveraging other people's material. For example, CSO Insights is a group that does a lot of studies of VPs of sales and what's going on in sales organizations. When they come out with a new study, I can easily send my prospects a link to that study and with a note that might say, Jim, I know that when you're, you know, as VP of sales, you're always curious in terms of what's going on in the market and how other people are tackling some of the same challenges that you are. Here's a recent study done by CSO Insights I think you'll find valuable. Also, I've got some insights or ideas on how to help you with some of the problems that are mentioned in that study. Let's set up a time to talk. And again, it's using other people's information as a springboard to come back to the fact that you have ideas around this information. You could do that with articles, reports, ebooks, anything like that if you start getting creative. And you also should think about how to build a good website if you are listening and have the control of doing that or can influence it at all. So where does that bring us? It brings us to the gracious close. And the gracious close really is really inviting them with a non-threatening response. It's let's set up a time to talk about this. If this is of interest, perhaps we should set up a five-minute conversation. But it's non-threatening. It's like no big deal. It's not I want to take an hour of your time to go through this. It's let's set up a short conversation or if this is of interest, let's talk. Let's get on the phone. So it's non-threatening. It's easy and, you know, it just invites them to participate with you, which is really the essence of what good email prospecting is all about. It's engagement. It's talking to the person. It's just doing it via short email exchanges. With that being said, I do want to read to you a couple emails that work so you can see how this all pulls together. And the first email I'm going to share with you is one that Nina did, and I talked about it earlier in the write-up for the session, too. And Nina sells she sells credit cards that you can deposit payroll things on. So it's for people who don't have banks and they can put all their money on a credit card type device for payment. And she had been trying to get into an account, or a number of accounts in the southern part of the country, and then they had a hurricane. And so she decided to leverage the hurricane, which was a trigger event, and use that as a way to get her foot in the door because she had some very valid reasons. And her subject line read, Disaster Recovery Issues. Carol, as a result of the recent hurricanes, many firms were challenged with paying their employees on time. I suspect that some of your stores may have struggled with this issue as well. Because the penalties for noncompliance with state laws governing payment of wages can be pretty stiff, many retailers are currently evaluating payroll cards as part of an improved disaster recovery plan. Has this issue jumped up on your priority list yet? Can you see how that is all? She's building up she's building her credibility into there. She understands what the wage issues are. She mentions that other retailers are looking at this, and she suggests, as she invites a response, has this jumped up on your priority list? 30 minutes later, she gets a yes. Let's set up a time to talk. Here's another one. And this is for somebody who's offering some invaluable information. Sam, I thought you might be interested in this new white paper on how pay-per-incident programs can save IT departments up to 37% as compared to on-site laptop service. Contrary to client expectations, the research showed that customer satisfaction rose significantly due to increased turn times and quality of service. Here's the link to download it. I think you'll find it interesting. That's all she said. And then she'd come back later and would have another email that would build on that and to set up a time to talk. She's trying to prove her credibility that she has some good information. And please note, that was not her information. This is what you can do with emails. Every single one of you can do this with emails. But it doesn't come by writing spur-of-the-moment emails. There are some creative juices that hit you and some wonderful ways to think about how to say what your company does in glowing terms. It really comes from understanding your customer, how they think. It comes from knowing the snap factors, you know, and really understanding how the snap factors impact a person's reaction to your email, as well as every other part of the sales process. But it comes from understanding that and then leveraging what you know about your customer and crafting messages that they go, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to learn more. That's what it's all about in this email, using email. That's what happens when you write messages like this. You get that response, and that's exactly what we want to do. As I said from the onset, one email is not the answer. It's a series of emails that support and build upon each other. You should think of a campaign of 8 to 10 contacts, and I would throw in voicemail as well, because you still don't know how the person prefers to be contacted. But when you do that, things honestly change. They honestly change, and you'll see a night and day difference. You will be making fewer prospecting. You will be calls or emails, but you will be seeing significantly more success, and you'll be involved in more sales processes than ever before. So I leave you with those ideas, hoping that you'll go look at your own emails as soon as you hang up from this call. You'll check them out, see what you need to delete and get rid of, and really work on crafting the message that can't be ignored. It'll fundamentally shift what you're doing. And finally, I'd like to say thank you for joining us. We will be sending you a link to this call so you can listen to it again, as well as some additional resources that you will find helpful. I appreciate you being here on a beautiful Friday afternoon, and thanks much, and back to work to y'all.